stretched out in a corner, just as high as I could be.
This is WHFR Dearborn, and now it's time for our public affairs show, and we call it the new WHFR Journal. And good morning, good afternoon. I got up a little late today, but actually I got up a little bit early and went to the Dearborn Farmers Market, Farmers and Artisans Market, and I'll tell you about it in a second. My name is Jay Koronick. I'm host of this program. It is our public affairs program where we talk about local news and often making comments, reading between the lines, alternative views, which is why we use the Bones theme from the TV show now, because we're getting down to the bones. Yeah, we're looking at the way things really are in the local area. You can't find this kind of show anywhere else in your dial. And then again, everything we do here at WHFR.FM, the station making waves, is intended to provide you with unique information as well as entertainment that you can't get from any other radio station in the Detroit area. If you're listening online from some other place in the world, we'd like you to consider that these small town stories, well, small town within a large metropolis of Detroit anyway, are exactly what you're probably experiencing too. I think there's a lot of similarities there. Well, we're going to get started with the stories. Since I did mention the farm market, it is the second week that that's happening in West Dearborn between the Bryant Library and Buddy's Pizza in the Bryant and Buddy's big parking lot, the paid lot. They've taken over half of that for the site of the farmers and artisans vendor tables, even expanding it on the grounds of the Bryant Library, too, almost stretching all the way to Michigan Avenue. I suspect they might, if they have more vendors, hopping in the future, because there's still 13 weeks to go for this experience, that they might actually have some tables that be visible from Michigan Avenue there. So it's West Dearborn, between Buddy's Pizza and Bryant Library, just behind it. All the parking in West Dearborn is, of course, as you know, because you, citizens of Dearborn, did vote that you wanted paid parking in West Dearborn. And that's probably because it was recommended at that time, 3-4 years ago now, by our mayor and the majority of the Dearborn City Council as the right thing to do. Although some West Dearborn businesses immediately closed up shop and left because they felt it was going to kill their business. And then, of course, tough economic times for Michigan and for the country as a whole continuing to cause that upset. And so, as we reported a couple weeks ago in this show, City Council not only discussed the issue of continuing paid parking, but some people were cussing. I can say that on the radio, cussing, without going into specifics, at the Dearborn City Council meeting about the, what I'd have to call it now, a fiasco. I mean, of course, you know, hindsight is always better than foresight, but several of the council people who were against it of course, had to say, I told you so, that it wouldn't work out, that we have this huge debt now for building the parking structures that are not being much used. We're losing money every year, even with people paying for parking in West Dearborn, those that come and park. Now, the cost is 50 cents for a half hour or up to like 59 minutes. In fact, my daughter, granddaughter, and myself went together, small family outing this morning, and it's sunny, it was a wonderful day, and we saw all the vendors out there. And because we were pulling out, and I thought, oh, we've been there an hour at least, and it turns out it was 58 minutes, and so it was only 50 cents. Now, there is free parking, but it's a couple blocks away further north from Michigan Avenue or a couple blocks south. Last year, I know when the farmer's market was south of Michigan Avenue, between those twin parking towers, which Councilman Doug Thomas calls Tweedledum and Tweedledee, dumb ideas, in other words, they had free parking in the towers during the farmer's market period. And, of course, the farmer's market was set up was right in between the two towers, so it was really convenient, and it was free. So that certainly helped get the concept started, but no free parking, even in the Bryant lot. I have a person there taking the 50 cents from each car, or the dollar if you stay longer, and I'm thinking, does this even pay the salary of that person in the box? You know what I mean? And, of course, there's metered parking elsewhere around there. Oh, well. But so much was there. And in case you didn't hear my report earlier, I'll just mention that besides people selling flowers that you can buy to plant, you know, plants, flowering plants, perennials, not perennials, annuals mostly, but they're the most colorful and reasonable prices. And so if you're going over there, you might want to get some colorful flowers to put someplace around your house. Saw some people that made some great organic dressing that my daughter bought a couple bottles because she likes dressing that goes on fattoush salads. And she'd never seen bottled fattoush dressing before. And they had that. The biggest number of vendors out of the 20-plus different vendors there, I think it was hard for me to choose because I love fresh bread. I love heavy-duty bread that is, great crust, flavorful, chewy insides, and a lot of people just like the marshmallow-type bread. But it was hard to choose because they had vendors there, and the price for the organic, healthy, fresh-baked breads was, depending on the size, some was like 1 pound of bread, and others it was like 2 pound chunk of bread, and so it's almost like a double loaf that you'd buy in the store. And, you know, store bread is anywhere from $2 to $3 a loaf anyway, and so the bread I saw out there that was just so wonderful, and of course, fresh bread aroma, fresh-baked aroma is a well, it's almost, can I say this on the radio, an aphrodisiac. I mean, it is so wonderful, so strong and powerful. Maybe it just reminds me of when my mother, a long time ago, used to cook bread at home. In any event, baked her own bread. In any event, there was like five vendors that had wonderful breads and different, too, so it was hard to choose. A pickle vendor, just fantastic, fresh, either garlic or non-garlic packed pickles, you know, no preservatives, no additives, except just wonderful spices. And I had been buying from that pickle vendor last year several times. Big jars, so they lasted me a long time. But let's see, jellies, strawberries, fresh vegetables, tomatoes, of course, as you would expect. Honey, fresh honey. Cherry juice, cherry syrup, a variety of cherry things from a Traverse City vendor. We found some organic meats, including bison. I didn't know there was any buffalo in Michigan. Well, some of it might come from, you know, outstate, maybe. But organic cage-free chicken. So there's one vendor, just one vendor doing that. And then I found some raw milk organic cheese. And I've just started getting into raw milk organic. Again, no pesticides, nothing that's, that might be harmful. And it is really, really delicious stuff. And as I said, I just started seeing, there was just one vendor that had it today, and he was selling out really quick. I'll give you a report in the future after I try some of this stuff. The cutest name of any company, and they had a variety of things, you know, breads and cheeses, was a company called Cheeky Monkey Foods. I kid you not, that's what it was called, and it's just a cute name. I just want to let you know. But a lot of great vendors out there. Organic gourmet pasta, freshly made local pasta for your Italian dishes. And aroma, I don't want to forget, aromatherapy candles. And while I was there, the HFCC Culinary Arts Department was doing a cooking demo of sautéed chicken, with, I think, lemon juice, some special sauce, and spinach salad. And, of course, the best part was, this happened about 10:30 this morning, free samples after they got it cooked. Oh, yeah. So that was real popular. And, of course, a table from Henry Ford Community College about our programs, admission questions can be answered, and so on, because Henry Ford Community College happens to be the sole big-time sponsor of this event this year. Good chance to get out there and meet the public, of course, but we always do several times a year, one place or the other anyway. We would cover this, folks, as a great local event, even if it wasn't sponsored by Henry Ford Community College, by the way. So hope to see you out there. I'm going to try to be out there shopping most Friday mornings. And again, that's the only day from 8 a.m. to 1 p.m. And there's still a lot of stuff for sale. Some people don't go down to the farmer's market, Eastern Market, as it's called in Detroit, which is always there every weekend, Saturday and Sunday. They say, well, if you don't get there by like 9 a.m., everything's all sort of picked over. And that's somewhat true. In this case, these vendors come with a lot of supply, and they just restock from their cars or their vans or their coolers. And so even going at 11 or 12 right before they close, it wouldn't be a big deal to get whatever you wanted. A lot of variety of things available. So I hope you can make it down there and save some of your grocery money, your scarce grocery money, I know, for some things that are really special. And if you consider the quantities and the freshness and the taste, you know, maybe if it tastes so good, maybe you don't have to quite eat as much. I know you certainly can't eat more than one or two pieces of those breads there. They're really, you know, take up a place in your stomach. So anyway, highly recommend the Dearborn Farmers and Artisans Market. The artisans, yeah, craftspeople. There's one person doing whirly birds out of wood for your yard. There was a wood furniture maker who also was doing birdhouses too. So there's, and I saw a display of China, whether it's China painting or China making that someone had. So there's arts and crafts out there and something to get involved with. Sorry, it's only 8 a.m. to 1 p.m., so if you have to go to work, it's wonderful to have a job, isn't it? Then you have to get somebody else to swing by for you, I guess. I see, according to the Dearborn Times-Herald newspaper, and we always look at the Times-Herald and the Press Guide, and I do apologize this week to the Dearborn Press and Guide, wonderful people. I forgot to bring the paper in. But I'm looking at the Dearborn Times-Herald, and of course, if you don't really read both papers, and I have read both papers, but if you don't read both yourself every week and you live in this area, how are you going to know what's going on? How do you know where you stand on issues that might come up on the ballot and who's running for city council or mayor or whatever? So you really need to try to subscribe or pick up a copy of both. And the Times-Herald is a little harder to find on the newsstands unless you go, I mean, I can guarantee you it's always in a box at the center. That is the Ford Community and Performing Arts Center there at Michigan and Greenfield and just in one of their entrance doors. I think it's the West entrance door. There's all these different papers that, you know, 25 cents or whatever toss in the box, and you can pick your Times Herald up there. I subscribe. I think it's cheaper, and that's the thing to do to help support local journalism. And both our papers are very, very good papers. They're different. They cover stories in different ways. Sometimes one scoops the other, as they say in the newspaper business, gets a story first. I talked to one of the vendors at the farmer's market, and He said every single day he goes around to a different market in the Detroit area to set up. And I see in the Times Herald they're saying it down in Taylor. I know there's several other communities I've seen that they're starting farm markets too. I know Susan McGraw, our general manager here, who lives in Garden City, said Garden City now has a farm market. I think it's on Wednesdays, of all things. Yeah, and I think they even have evening hours. Anyway, this one in Taylor, Michigan, is going to debut on June 24th. And, of course, let me grab my calendar. A couple weeks away. Today's the 12th, in case you didn't check. Okay, and June the 24th. Aha, another Wednesday. Okay, so a week from next Wednesday, at the Sheraton Community Center in front of Heritage Park, that's Pardee Road in Taylor, their hours are noon to 7 p.m., which I think is a cool idea because, you know, then people coming out of work at 2 or 3 or 4, they still have a couple hours to shop at the farm market. And it doesn't require the farmers have to get up so early, although I'm told many farmers do have to get up early if they have to work on their farm, if they have chickens and animals and things like that to take care of. Nonetheless, some of the vendors I see are the same ones in Dearborn. Of course, it's a different day of the week. See, so like the Traffic Jam has cheeses and breads, and I saw them this morning. Traffic Jam and Snug, they run a bakery for their restaurants in Detroit near the Wayne State campus area. And Traffic Jam is one of my favorite restaurants down there, by the way. In any event, so they're in both places. I don't see any other specific ones that are listed here in the story that are in both places. So might be fun if you had the time to go to one or the other each week and just check out what's where. Again, most of the food is naturally grown, even if they can't afford official organic certification. And they tell me that the healthiest food is the food that grows well in your own climate, okay, where you live. Now, most food in grocery stores comes thousands of miles. I mean, most fruit and vegetables, I'm sorry, I get a bag of maybe at my local Kroger store, and I get a bag of seedless grapes. Comes from Chile. Okay, that's South America, folks. It's probably 8,000 miles away. How can they get them to us intact 8,000 miles away? So, well, they fly overnight in a plane. No, it's not overnight, folks. It's not directly to Detroit either. It takes a few days, if not a week or two. And, of course, they must keep them refrigerated. But they have to grow them with special additives and pesticides and so on so that they can have firmer skin or whatever it takes to keep them from spoiling faster than you would expect. And then again, what do we know about living in Chile or Peru? I mean, what do we know about those climates and the soil? I'm not saying the food's not healthy to eat according to government standards, but it's always a better idea to buy local, support your local people. It keeps the money local, too, in this bad economic time. Because if you're buying things from a local farmer, they will spend it themselves, they have to, on everything they need for their home and their farm. And so it only makes perfect sense to support your local farm market. Several in Dearborn that have official, 24/7 operations, the Westbourne Market and what's the other market? One's on Michigan Avenue, and the other one is down in Monroe. And they say they try as much as possible to deal with local farmers and vendors. In fact, I talked to some of the farmers market people in Dearborn today about, why don't you have your pickles at Westbourne? And they said, well, they carry a competing brand, the same thing, and they don't want two different brands. It might confuse the people or take up extra shelf space. And so so there's some territoriality, I guess, in terms of shelf space, in terms of prior agreements. But I wanted to feature, as we do on this show with Alternative Ideas, the populist commentator from Texas, always really from the whole United States, Jim Hightower, and he has a number of opinions. Good for him. That's what he's paid for. And we often share them with you. And so we'd like to feature one right now that is about food cooperatives, as long as we're on this natural food discussion here. So here's Jim Hightower, my favorite progressive opinion person. And take a listen to this just for 2 minutes, and we'll be back with more of my comments about local news on the new WHFR Journal.
The big demand in food these days is that it be locally produced. A new term has even been coined, locavore, to describe consumers who want the freshness and sense of community that comes from eating the bounty of small-scale local producers. You know, hometown guys like Frito-Lay and Hunt's Foods. Proving that no standard of integrity is so pure that it can't be perverted by corporate profiteers, these giants of industrialized food production are reaching out with their deep-pocket advertising budgets to co-opt the locavore label. Frito-Lay, a multinational, multi-billion-dollar agribusiness giant that buys 2 billion pounds of spuds a year from hundreds of very large farmers to make Lay's potato chips, is presently running national television ads trying to convince viewers that its farmers are just local folks. "We grow potatoes in Florida," declares one of its corporate providers in an ad imbued with bucolic down-home imagery. Not mentioned is that the potatoes he grows on a sprawling 800-acre spread end up as chips that are sold in New York, California, and beyond. Local? ConAgra, the conglomerate that owns Hunt's Tomatoes, concedes that it can't literally be local in the geographical sense. So, says a consultant working on Hunt's current locavore ad campaign, the question is, how do we take local to that next level? In corporate world, you see, local is not a place, but a figment of marketeering imagination. This is Jim Hightower saying, Jessica Prentice, the food writer who coined the locavore tag, begs to differ with that definition. The local food movement, she explains, represents an ethic of small-scale production, ecologically centered in a place and based on personal relationships within a community. Prentice says firmly, large corporations peddling junk food are the exact opposite of what this is about.
Today's commentary is underwritten by Wiley & Sons, publisher of Hightower's new book titled Swim Against the Current, Even a Dead Fish Can Go with the Flow, now available wherever books are sold.
We're back. This is the new WHFR Journal, Local News and Views. Jay Koronek here with you today for the June 12th edition, 2009. Happy to have you with us. Changes in store for the Spirit Fest, which has already started 2 days ago, and it's going to continue through this weekend. Now, this fest is the 23rd annual one, and it's in Dearborn Heights. Features many familiar attractions from past years, but residents might notice a few new wrinkles this year, says the story here in the Times-Herald. Headlining the changes is the rescheduling of the popular Mayor's Walk, so you might have missed that on Wednesday. I know our Dearborn mayor always does a walk at the start of Dearborn Homecoming. I'm not sure which one is actually getting more exercise there. All participants in the walk will get a Mayor's Walk t-shirt. Yeah, now they tell us. Now they tell us. This paper came out on Wednesday, but folks, the walk was the morning of Wednesday. So, now, actually, as a subscriber to the Times-Herald, they bring it by my house on Monday. Yeah, it's like one of those sci-fi TV shows. I get the paper 2 days earlier than what it's dated. It's, you know, it's whoo. If you do subscribe. And I don't know if it's like at the Ford Community and Performing Arts Center on Monday, but it apparently is available earlier, even though it's the official weekly Wednesday edition. So, if you got it early, then you could have got that free t-shirt. Oh, okay. And that's pretty much all I'm going to feature from the Times-Herald. Again, the Spirit Fest is happening at their usual location. their recreation center, the Canfield Community Center, 1801 Beach Daily. And they're going to, oh my goodness, lots of food, amusement park rides, all kinds of fun stuff going on over there this weekend, including today, and usually start, I think, 11 a.m., 10 a.m. They go to about 10 at night or so. Don't have the times in there, I don't think. Anyway, maybe that's something you want to do this weekend. Today is a distinguished day in terms of broadcasting because television broadcasting is going to stop being analog, going to turn off those analog stations and turn on their digital signal transmitters. So if you don't have a digital TV, a TV with a digital tuner built in connected to an antenna, or if you're on cable already, or a Dish Network or something like that, DirecTV, you have nothing to do, nothing to worry about today. But supposedly a million people in the U.S. are going to discover they have no TV reception sometime today. I understand it's going to be different times in different places, but sometime today, all analog television broadcasting is going to stop. And so if you're watching on an antenna, well, just remember, got a radio, WHFR is still on the air because it's not affecting AM or FM radio broadcasts. Okay, you might have heard about HD radio for radio broadcasting, and don't worry about that. Okay, the standard analog AM and FM is still going to be there, and it's your backup plan. Okay, and as someone reminded me on our staff here too, if you want to watch the Red Wings game tonight and all of a sudden you discover you lost your TV signal, it's on Channel 9. Channel 9 in Canada is staying analog. They're not using the same digital system they might someday that we use. Ours is not the best in the world, according to, that's my humble telecom professor opinion after doing a lot of research. We chose something that was only really good for the big companies and the profit-making companies, and we're kind of unique in the world. Although, you know, as the U.S. stumbles and bumbles through life, a lot of other countries feel economically sort of forced, or even by popular culture pressure, they're forced to follow us in that same stupid direction, and that's happened more than once. And so just because we're sort of leading the world in several ways doesn't mean we're making smart decisions all the time. Oh, no. And don't get me started giving you a list of bad decisions. Vietnam, Iraq, there's two examples. But even in terms of television standards, the current one was not thought up by the government, not a team of objective people, but by the big broadcasting companies themselves. I mean, they have to do the changeover, but they want to guarantee that they're going to continue to make as much profit as possible. And what's best for the average person is not the first thing in their head. And this whole adoption process has been pretty crazy. I mean, I think it's pretty stupid because the poorest people who can't afford cable or Dish won't have any TV. Okay, and I'm not saying TV is a God-given right or a Constitution-promised right, like life, liberty, the pursuit of happiness. Didn't say life, liberty, and the pursuit of television watching. Happiness can be found in a lot of places, and maybe not having TV on might actually be a better way to raise your kids and live your own life. You might start talking to each other in your family or reading books. Oh, my gosh, reading books. Does anybody know how to read anymore? Okay, one word after the other, ink stains on paper that has symbolic meaning. It's a great, great endeavor. And maybe going to your local public library. There are things to do that are a lot better. Go out getting exercise. Just go for a bike ride. Go for a walk. My goodness, all the bad things that television has caused. And probably the worst thing is it keeps us from getting healthy exercise on a daily basis for many of us. And the other side is, of course, all the commercial advertising that makes us think we want stuff when we don't need it at all. And there goes our budget. And we're We're lulled into believing that we can charge right and left. You know, everything is priceless, but somehow able to be paid for by a MasterCard. You know, just all those very, very mistaken notions that come from commercial advertising on TV, which we're bombarded with. You know, almost 20 minutes every hour of commercial TV is commercials. That's why you love WHFR. We don't do commercials. I know we're not allowed to do commercials, but we don't want to do commercials. So there, because there's better things to do. Now, okay, we heard the food co-op spot. Let's find a segue here. Let me talk about, well, just briefly. I went to, for the first time, the 11th annual Senior Citizen Conference. It was last Wednesday, June 10th, at the Ford Community and Performing Arts Center. And, of course, sponsored by, and I think the original idea came from Gary Warrenchek's campaign staff when he was first elected as a representative, a state rep from Dearborn to Lansing. And, of course, he was there, and he was the main host and MC. And I'd say it seemed like 400 people, seniors from only from Dearborn, Allen Park, and Melvindale, who were allowed to go in there. He really ought to open it up to others. Of course, there's so many seniors these days who want a free breakfast. Oh, yeah, all the coffee and donuts. And the fruit juice was like a little teeny, like a tablespoon in a plastic container. So not particularly healthy. I mean, why wasn't somebody there who was talking about healthy eating or healthy food? No, nobody. It was all the health service people. I counted 18 vendor tables, and the majority of them were, because there's one bank there, because seniors have money, right? They had on display a Ford Fusion Hybrid from Fairlane Ford, and that was lovely. $34,000 sticker price. $34,000 to save a couple bucks on gas. Whereas the regular Fusion could be bought for, $24,000 or less. Now, this was a high-trim edition. I mean, it had leather seats inside, and so it probably had all the options, probably top-end. And that's the way they think they can sell those hybrids. If you can pay the extra $4,000 to $6,000 for the hybrid engine, then they figure, well, they're willing to, they got enough money to pay for that. Let's toss on another $4,000 to $6,000 of extras. Because they'll probably pay for that too. And that is one criticism, of course, of the original Toyota Priuses, is they were pretty bare bones basic. And now they have a lot of options, and some of them go for up to $28,000, $30,000. So Honda has introduced the hybrid Insight, which is below $20,000, I understand, although very Spartan interior, not very fancy or classy, but supposedly a hybrid for the masses, or people that can't afford the other ones. So obviously we wish Ford well. Don't have a report this week on GM or Chrysler. I think everybody knows where they're standing. Chrysler avoided bankruptcy. Well, they did go through bankruptcy, but they successfully got their reorganization plan in place, and the Supreme Court did not delay it. This was Tuesday, Wednesday this week, and so Chrysler is now owned by Fiat. Let's hope it doesn't become a terrible mess. Again, Fiat used to stand for Fix It Again Tony when they had their own cars for sale here. But now they're under new management in the last 7-10 years. They're known as making high-quality cars in Europe, small cars, economical cars, and they also own some other models. I think they own Alfa Romeo. And love to get some of those sports cars back in this country. They're fantastic performing cars. Some real expensive, but a couple that were, very affordable. Just very good. Although I know they had repair problems too, in the 60s and 70s when I was around looking at cars a lot. Okay, what did I think about the senior conference? Well, it did happen. They had Wayne County Executive Robert Fracano making a big optimistic, positive speech in his, I'm sure it was a $1,200 suit, flashing his BlackBerry phone and smartphone messages before and after he was on the stage. Oh, everything's great. We got the greatest state. We got the greatest engineers, most of them out of work, he didn't mention, and everything's going to be great. And then later Wednesday afternoon, I heard he just got done firing 500 people from the Wayne County offices, from Wayne County government. Now, people in his office took a 10% pay cut. Gary Warrenchuk didn't, by the way, I don't think. I don't think he did. The story sounded like other people in Fakano's office. It didn't say he took a 10% pay cut, however, because he's got to pay for those suits and that BlackBerry unlimited phone service, too, you know. And so I thought that was disingenuous. Just tell the seniors everything was great and everything is great and blah, 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 when everything is not great. Even I've got Gary Warrenchuk's report, which everybody from this area did receive in the mail. A lot of people just throw it away. They don't read it. Challenges and changes coming for the commission. First of all, some people have retired. Gary Warrenchuk's committee assignments are the same as from his previous term. He's reappointed chair of the Committee on Audit, keeping track of how the money's spent, and issuing reports, you know, to make sure everything is on the up and up. He's also the vice chair in charge of vice, no, and the second in command of the Economic Development Committee, excuse me, Gary, and he serves on the Government Operations Committee and the Special Committee on Rules. It's just a member of those. But he says the county's financial challenges continue to mount. For several years, for most of the decade, in fact, every level of government from the state to the cities has come under incredible financial pressure with stagnant revenues and increasing costs. And he goes on to say, as we're all aware, property values have been especially hard hit in the past couple of years, and that results in less property tax being paid to Wayne County. The county's assessment equalization report this year showed the equalized value of property countywide is a full 10% lower than just last year. Even. And so that's 10% less money coming in. So maybe that's why they picked that 10% figure to reduce the salaries for the people in Fakano's office. And he did have a survey attached, which I've already sent in. Sorry, I don't remember the questions on there. But one of the questions was, what do you want us to do about Cobo Hall? Apparently, the county owns Cobo Hall and has to make a decision whether to expand or replace or whatever. And I don't know. I thought the city of Detroit did that. Maybe they'd work in partnership, of course, on that. We know that, just in case you've forgotten, that Wayne County actually operates a Metro Airport and that there's a big plan to connect Metro Airport and with Detroit in transportation, buses, rail, and so on, as well as Ann Arbor. That's been talked about, and that's why we need that new Dearborn train station, too, as soon as possible. Somebody come up with $30 million, please. And I think that train station will happen. It's just slowly moving into it. It's going to take a while. So, now, I did not stay, I'm sorry, for Chuck Stokes, editorial director of Channel 7. I can't figure what he might be saying. All seniors should watch Channel 7 TV more, because they give great 30-second health reports that are really in-depth and challenging and will help you a great deal. No, they don't. Most commercial stations, their editorial or public service commitment is very small, very marginal. They can't say they make a major effort to program for their citizens. And of course, they would never want to criticize status quo commercial advertisers that are already using their station for advertising. So any sort of alternative ideas, pardon the expression, things that might be better than the mainstream ideas, they're probably not going to feature because there's no money in it for them. They might make people, their sponsors, unhappy. That's just the fact, folks. I'm a telecom prof and have been for 40 years here at Henry Ford Community College, although retired from the day-to-day teaching, but just around the WHFR causing trouble and and so on. But believe me, the research and all my readings over the years, I speak truth. And so I didn't want to stay and hear that. And then there was something from the Dearborn Fire Marshal. What? He's going to talk about replacing the batteries in your smoke alarms? Yes, probably. Somebody from probate court. So what happens when you go to court? What about all those tickets you get for whatever, parking on the curb or something after a wild night out? So the breakfast food was not good, and I was told from last year that the lunch was not particularly healthy for that matter either. And I don't know what it was this week. Maybe it was better, but I'm not saying you die from it, but you know, can't live life on coffee and donuts for breakfast. That's just wrong, wrong, wrong. The coffee's not as bad as it used to be unless you've got serious heart condition. Even, in fact, decaf is actually just as healthy as caffeinated coffee, as long as you don't, for most people, go above 2 cups a day. 2 cups, about 12 ounces, 15 ounces, a big mug. That's about all you should have per day, according to most health experts. But it's fine, it's good, and it's good for you, as it turns out, even without milk, and lay off the 5 cubes of sugar, would you? If your coffee is good, if it tastes good, if you love coffee, you don't need that sugar. Okay. Sorry. Editorial comment there. Remember, the opinions expressed on the show, this show, are not necessarily those of anyone else here at Henry Ford Community College, not faculty, staff, students, or administration. Okay, let's see. We're still on the coffee food bent. And so Jim Hightower is coming back again at you. Oh, my goodness. I found a number of things connected with ideas I had for today. Here he's talking about your favorite commercial coffee shop, Starbucks. So listen up 2 minutes and 9 seconds, Jim Hightower, about Starbucks and how they treat their workers.
What does the name Starbucks say to you? Does it conjure up Van Gogh's serene portrait of the starry night? Is it about the idealism of reaching for the stars? Or is it just about the bucks? For sure, this ubiquitous purveyor of corporate coffee reaches for the soft, socially progressive image of a cool coffee house. Okay, it's a coffee chain with over 4,500 look-alike, feel-alike, push-button outlets, but the company refers to itself as the Starbucks Experience. CEO Howard Schultz even takes the imagery to a philosophical plateau. We're not in the business of filling bellies, he recently oozed. We're in the business of filling souls. How angelic. But a growing number of the 135,000 workers who do the grunt work that has made Preacher Schultz a very rich boss say that the Starbucks Experience is less than heavenly for them. The corporation calls its workers partners, but pays them only $15,000 to $20,000 a year for full-time work. Then there's the optimal scheduling policy, which means you never know when or for how long you'll be called in to work. Healthcare? Starbucks insures a lower percentage of its employees than Walmart does. And don't even think of talking union. You'll get harassed and possibly fired for that. Indeed, Starbucks is a leader in a corporate lobbying blitz to sidetrack the Employee Free Choice Act, which would give workers who want to form a union a way to stop the bullying, union-busting tactics of corporate bosses. This is Jim Hightower saying, but it's not just baristas and others inside the company who are pushing for change. Outsiders are too. A tremendous online campaign called Stop Starbucks is using Twitter, TwitPix, contests, blogs, petitions, and other fun ways for grassroots folks to help make Starbucks as progressive as its image makers want us to believe that it is. Join the fun at www.stopstarbucks.com. Today's commentary is underwritten by Wiley & Sons, publishers of Hightower's new book titled Swim Against the Current, Even a Dead Fish Can Go with the Flow, now available wherever books are sold.
Jay Kornick back with you here, the new WHFR Journal, for Friday, June the 12th, 2009. I thought the most amazing fact there in that story was that they pay their workers worse than Walmart. Ouch. And, of course, the health insurance issue comes up again. Barack Obama has said nationally just yesterday, socialized medicine is not on the table. Well, if it's on the floor, we should stoop down and pick it up, because that's the only way we're going to solve this crisis. To have the federal government try to raise money to support a public health care program that only pays back, just like Medicare, the big health providers, which is part of the reason why costs have gone up, doesn't make any sense. Oh, it may be politically expedient, but that doesn't mean it's going to save us money. Don't we want to save money? Okay. And don't give me that socialism bugaboo stuff. I've heard that from all, you know, the Fox News commentators. As we pointed out in the show, don't you love the U.S. Postal Service? How bad have they ever been to you? I see them every day by 12 noon at my house, and they often smile at me. Now, not many people smile at me. I don't know why that is, but they smile. They're just happy to get all my mail out of their bag, because I get a lot of mail, but a lot of magazines. I read a lot, and so I get a lot of deliveries. And anyway, we have a lot of things in this country that work really well, and yes, it's socialized. Oh, my God. Doesn't mean, you know, if somebody could compete, they wouldn't allow it. They could. But to use these same healthcare providers, and they even said, in fact, I've got another Hightower commentary on Blue Cross Blue Shield, that if there was socialized medicine, the providers couldn't compete. They couldn't provide the service. They could be in business, but they couldn't provide the services at as low a cost. The two together. They couldn't provide all the services at as low a cost. And even though the general public, which may not really know the full picture on every side, favors the concept of health care for all that is free, even though your general taxes may go up, okay? But overall, you don't pay for that health insurance anymore, so you're saving money in the long run. Get this? And there's cost control, cost containment. And no, you don't have to wait a year for treatment. That's only in some very weird, strange cases, and that's in the Canadian system. We don't have to have the Canadian system. We can take the best of the Canadian system, the German system, the French system. We can put it all together ourselves. But our politicians don't have any courage. They don't want to be criticized. I see John Dingell, of course, is sort of taking the lead on this, but he's still a political animal, even though he's been in there so long. Who cares, John, if you don't get reelected? Maybe, as you've always said, and you said this to me more than once, your dad introduced the first nationalized health care bill in the United States legislature and Congress in 1948. And before you go and before you retire, or forced out, or whatever, that's what you want to see. Well, a public system that just pays back the same healthcare people that are raising our costs and giving us bad support for our needs doesn't make any sense, John. Doesn't make any sense at all. So put, please, special memo to Representative Dingell, put all of your political capital on the line. Go all the way. John Conyers always has. And he still gets reelected all the time, right? Let's go all the way. And honoring your dad, Dingell Sr., okay? I don't think he was senior. I think they had different middle names or something. And it's not John Dingell Jr., is it? It isn't, no. But maybe it is. But go all the way, please. Here's a editorial from Paul Krugman, who is the Nobel Prize-winning economist this last year. He should know something about the economy. And this is his editorial comment about the healthcare industry that we have today from June 5th, just last Friday. And it's entitled, Keep Them Honest. The big healthcare push is officially on, but the devil is in the details. Health reform will fail unless we get serious cost control, and we won't get that kind of control unless we change the way the insurance industry behaves. So let me offer Congress two pieces of advice, and this is Paul Krugman, K-R-U-G-M-A-N. Nobel Prize winning economist for 2008. Two pieces of advice to Congress. Number one, don't trust the insurance industry. Number two, don't trust the insurance industry. How, he says, can we reform what President Obama calls a, quote, broken system, unquote, if the current players stay in place? The answer is supposed to lie in a combination of regulation and competition. It's a sign of the way the political winds are blowing that insurers aren't opposing new regulations. The president of America's Health Insurance Plans, that's AHIP, the industry lobby, has explicitly accepted the need for, quote, much more aggressive regulation of insurance, unquote. What's not settled, however, is whether regulation will be supplemented by competition in the form of a public plan. The, quote, public option, unquote, if it materializes, will be just that, an option Americans can choose. And the reason for providing this option was clearly laid out in a letter this week from Obama to Senators Max Baucus, and Edward Kennedy. It will give Americans, quote, a better range of choices, make the healthcare market more competitive, and keep the insurance companies honest. In the Senate, Edward Kennedy has introduced that bill now in the last few days. But that is a public option. It's not nationalized or socialized, if you love the evil sound of that term. It's not the good system, the one that would keep costs down and give health care to everybody and lower cost overall to everybody. No, it's not that. Well, as Paul Krugman said, the last five words are crucial in that phrase, Obama's phrase, keep the insurance companies honest. He says those last five words are crucial because history shows that the insurance companies will do nothing to reform themselves unless they are forced to do so. Does that sound familiar to anybody? Like our big financial companies, the big banks, the AIG, the Lehman Brothers, they will do nothing to reform themselves until they're forced to do so. By whom? The federal government, not John Q. Public, not the states. Thinking about that, he continues, Paul Krugman, Nobel Prize winning economist. Back in 1993, the political strategist William Kristol, and he's a hyper-conservative, who used to write for the New York Times, but he was so dim-witted, whatever reason, he's not with them anymore. But William Kristol suggested Republicans oppose any significant health care reform. But even he acknowledged that some things needed fixing. Calling for, among other things, quote, a simplified uniform insurance form, unquote. Krugman says, fast forward to the present. A few days ago, major players in the health industry laid out what they intend to do to slow the growth in healthcare costs. Topping the list of proposals was, quote, administrative simplification, unquote. Providers, the lobby conceded, face, quote, administrative challenges, unquote, because each insurer has his own telephone numbers, codes, claims forms, and procedures. And this is driving, I may say as an aside, the doctors crazy all around the country, everywhere. The hospital's crazy. All these different codes, different forms, ways to get reimbursement. This is what's sending cost up. Call this competition to reduce cost? It's a mess. I know local doctors who have their own private practice. They're going crazy. They would love national health care coverage for everybody. Okay? Because it means they wouldn't need all the people in the office that are doing nothing for your health care. They're simply trying to get the money from these insurance companies with all the different forms and codes and computer systems required to access these things. Can't just do it by calling it in. And Paul Krugman concludes, think about it. The insurance industry's idea of a cutting-edge reform is to do what William Kristol, and again, William Kristol, the conservative Republican, thought it should have done 15 years ago. So be warned, however, the insurance industry will do everything it can to avoid being held accountable. The most recent ruse is a proposal for a trigger, quote unquote. The public option will only become available if private insurers fail to meet certain performance criteria. The idea, of course, is to choose those criteria to ensure that the trigger is never pulled. Right now, the health insurers are promising to deliver major cost savings. History shows that such promises can't be trusted. As Obama said, we need a serious, real public option, at least, to keep the insurance companies honest. And I feel the only viable option is complete single payer, that is government paid national health care for everybody. And if you want to opt out because you want better coverage or special treatments and you got the tons of money to do so, you can, but you can't stop paying your premiums that help support everybody in the U.S. 47 million people with no health care coverage. And of course, those out of work. With no job, you have no health care coverage. So that's part of the problem. Well, here's Jim Hightower's opinion about something, an incident that just happened with Blue Cross, Blue Shield. I've abbreviated it here on my computer screen as BCBS. Yeah. Okay. Jim Hightower is third and final, yes, editorial opinion of the day. Take a listen.
Golly, so many lies, so little time. Some of the profiteers in America's current system of corporatized medicine are so panicked at the prospect of real healthcare reform that they're already flinging great gobs of mendacious BS at our television screens in a desperate effort to stop reform. For example, Blue Cross of North Carolina, a multi-billion-dollar corporation that dominates that state's health insurance market, is running TV ads warning darkly that President Obama's reform plan will force patients into, quote, a government-run system that will restrict our choices and raise our costs. Rise up, is the message, and help defeat Obama's plan. Only Obama has no such plan. In fact, his proposal dramatically increases consumer choice by creating a new insurance competitor, which is precisely why Blue Cross wants to kill it. Rather than leaving all of us to the untender mercies of rip-off insurance corporations that force us to pay ever-rising premiums for ever-declining coverage, Obama would give every American the additional choice of buying into a public insurance pool. Called the public option, this alternative does not force anyone into the plan. The public option is, as the name suggests, optional. Folks can choose to stick with their private insurance policy if they're happy with it, or switch to the public plan. The new option, though, will be much cheaper, because the government will not pay outlandish executive salaries, run expensive advertising campaigns, rake off profits, maintain vast bureaucracies to say no to patients and doctors, or have swank executive offices. This is Jim Hightower saying, such wasteful corporate overhead now siphons off about a third of our health care dollars, money that goes straight into the pockets of the insurance giants, doing nothing to provide any care. Blue Cross is determined to keep this system in place by staving off the creation of the public option, even if it has to run a PR campaign of lies to do it.
Today's commentary is underwritten by Wiley & Sons, publisher of Hightower's new book titled Swim Against the Current, Even a Dead Fish Can Go with the Flow, now available wherever books are sold.
One-third the cost of healthcare is the administrative cost, even at the healthcare industry itself. Yeah, they have to hire people to find out who to kick off of healthcare. You know, oh, this person got sick. Oh, let's find a way to discontinue their policy. That's not right. And some people can't even get insurance because they have a prior health condition. Okay, you were sick once. That means you've got to die sooner because nobody wants to insure you. That's almost the situation we have today. Or you have to pay huge monster premiums. Now, if you would just continue being treated along the way with free drugs too, prescription drugs as needed, well, there wouldn't be those extra costs. You follow? Okay, preventative medicine? Oh, my goodness. If you want something to do this weekend, send an email to John Dingle and tell him to go all the way. All the way. Not just a public option with a trigger, but national health care for everybody. Okay? He knows it's the right thing. His dad knew it was the right thing to do, but he's still a political animal. And in his probably last couple of terms, whether by his choice or somebody else's, he's got the seniority, he's got the respect, he should go all the way. Senator Edward Kennedy's bill is pretty strong in the Senate, but it needs to be stronger. They need to go all the way. And who cares if these corrupt healthcare companies have some trouble, have some profit problems, find it impossible to compete? I mean, most of their workers say, well, they'll all be out of jobs. Well, if the government gets into the business, they'll have to hire somebody. So they'll hire some of these people that already know something about the healthcare system. So I don't think, and there had to be a changeover. Probably take 5 or 10 years to change it over, you know. And you could still have some private insurance for extra coverage or super doctors in Switzerland coverage or whatever you want. You know, you could do that. Well, we got to get out of here. Thank you for listening to the new WHO Journal today. Remember, the opinions expressed here are, in this case, just mine and Jim Hightower's and the newspapers and the Pulitzer Prize-winning economist, Paul Krugman, not necessarily anyone else here at Henry Ford Community College. So coming up next is Highway 61 with Joanne Kay and the best blues in town from 2 to 6 p.m. today. We're going to just conclude with our Bones theme and go right on into the Highway 61 theme. This is WHFR Dearborn. Be careful out there.
WHFR Dearborn, broadcasting as always from the campus of Henry Ford Community College. Highway 61 is on the air.